One of the most obvious characteristics of the New Thought movement, of which we are a part, that's the name of the spiritual movement, for those of you who may be new, is that we do not believe that most of the stories told in all the different sacred books of all the different religions around the world are literally true. We believe that most of those stories, if not all, are metaphorical. You've heard that term before. In other words, we believe that they are stories told in such a way that the people who heard them at the time were able to understand better what their teacher was saying, because they were about things that were familiar to them. Stories about farmers sowing seeds, or fishermen in stormy seas, or prodigal sons returning home are meaningful stories that most people who were living at whatever the time was could easily identify with, because they could easily understand the images, all right, and the relationships between the characters. They could much more easily grasp the meaning behind the spiritual stories. That's why people like Jesus and the Buddha and Muhammad and so many other great spiritual teachers use that technique to teach spiritual wisdom. And the truth is, these stories were so effective, whatever language or place or time they were uttered in, these same stories still ring true for us today, as long as we look for the deeper meaning behind them. But there was another tool that these great teachers used besides metaphors, and it was something called similes. Remember that term from high school English, most of you? Simile is the Forrest Gump approach. Life is like a box of chocolates, you know, something is like something else. The kingdom of heaven is like a garden. Faith is like a mustard seed. And their purpose wasn't to actually describe these invisible or abstract spiritual concepts as much as it was to give the average person a deeper sense of what these things were like. All right? Now, what we need to be clear about as we go through our spiritual studies is both similes and metaphors are extremely effective tools for learning, as long as we don't lose sight of the fact that they are only imperfect physical representations of non-physical spiritual ideas. In other words, we have to remember that even though a map describes the territory, the map is not the territory, right? The menu describes the meal, but we don't eat the menu, right? Okay, so we have to keep that difference, all right? So anyway, today I want to talk about a more modern spiritual simile, loosely based on a lecture that Dr. Ernest Holmes, our founder, who wrote the textbook, as Judy said, first presented back in the 1930s, right before the age of television began. And the title of his talk, his lecture at the time, it was in Los Angeles, is "You Are a Spiritual Broadcasting Station." Kind of an interesting title, and I like it because it was a simple but very brilliant effort, very subtly brilliant, to get people in the 20th century to think about spirituality in a different way, to get them to think about spirituality as something that could actually be intelligent and rational and scientific instead of something that depended on fear, superstition, or blind faith. So at that time, in the 1930s, Dr. Holmes was trying to get across to a fairly sophisticated and well-educated audience in Los Angeles and New York, where he spoke primarily, this philosophy that he had developed that saw God and us and the world in a very different relationship than the one taught by the older traditional religions that most people at the time had grown up in. So instead of believing in a God who lived out there somewhere in a place called heaven, existing separately from us and the world that he, always a male, created, who spent his time manipulating both us and the world for his own unknown reasons, Dr. Holmes was presenting his interpretation of what he and many other mystics throughout the years, excuse me, believed the great spiritual teachers throughout history were trying to tell us. He believed, as he wrote in the very first page, actually, of The Science of Mind, he said, I quote this, "We all look forward to the day when science and religion shall walk hand in hand through the visible to the invisible. We all look forward to the day when science and religion shall walk hand in hand, joined through the visible, the world we can see, into the invisible. And the invisible is just as real as the visible." He wanted to get the point across that the real creative power of the universe, the real God, if you want to use that word, was actually a conscious and loving intelligence that expressed itself as its creation, meaning you and me and the world that we see. He wanted people to understand that we are all individual expressions of an active, present, omnipresent, impersonal, but extremely supportive power, that we are constantly sending and receiving and sharing and manifesting ideas and emotions and energy in an endless flow of life, and that we are all interconnected with each other and with the world around us. Same ideas that all the teachers were trying to tell us in different ways. He believed completely in what Emerson said in his essay on self-reliance, one of my favorite essays, and I'm a big Emerson fan, as you know. He said, "We lie in the lap of immense intelligence and are organs of its activity and receivers of its truth." Everybody go, ooh. See, we lie in the lap of immense intelligence and are organs of its activity and receivers of its truth. Now, as far as religion goes, that is a very powerful but very different image of our place in the world and our relationship with the power that created it. So to get this point across, Dr. Holmes decided that stories like the ones about the loaves and the fishes and the farmer sowing seeds and all those different stories were not going to cut it in the 20th century Los Angeles and New York world. So he turned to a simile that was much more contemporary. He decided to use an example that reflected the advance of scientific knowledge and technology over the last couple thousand years. And this morning, I want to take some of what he talked about and expand upon it, because I believe that these ideas are even more relevant now than they were when Dr. Holmes approached the idea back in the age of radio, way and way back before television or cell phones or the internet or Google or Amazon or Facebook or any of that other stuff that we are all so caught up in now. So first of all, in both a physical and a metaphysical meaning above the physical sense, we are all extremely sensitive and sophisticated transmitters and receivers. We constantly have thoughts coming into us from somewhere, you know, and we are constantly expressing many of those thoughts outward through our words, our emotions, our actions, our inventions, our businesses, all these things that we create. Not only that, we are completely immersed in what the physicists of the time used to call the cosmic ether, okay, which is just another way of saying, before they really understood it, that there is energy everywhere that affects everything around us. I mean, our physical bodies form, our growth, our movements are affected by gravity pulling us down and the centrifugal force of the world trying to throw us out. We got a balance there, okay? And at any given moment, there are all sorts of different energy waves going through us, light waves, sound waves, stuff we can't see or can't hear, all sorts of other waves, microwaves. Today we got cell phone waves. We got all these different things, x-rays, stuff from the moon and the stars and everything. And we can't see or feel any of it, but it's very real, and it affects us 24 hours a day. But we've also come to realize that this is not just a one-way street. A lot of these things we have learned to affect, direct, and use by using our intelligence to direct the laws that govern their existence. So we're receiving all these waves, and for many, many years, didn't know anything about it, but now we're capable of projecting, receiving all at the same time. That's what our scientific learning has allowed us to do. So since we are both transmitters and receivers, let me talk about the receiving part first. And even though it's an imperfect analogy, I want you to think of this, okay? Our combined physical form with a spiritual component to it. The part of us that we can see, our body, and the part we can't see, which you may call spirit or soul or whatever happens to be. Think of this as a kind of self-aware portable radio. Okay, no plug, no connections, totally portable. Remember, anybody have a little transistor radio back when you were growing up? Remember those things? Not connected to anything. That's how I listened to the Beatles in 1963 when they first showed up. Anyway, to begin with, we've got a pretty good, powerful, reliable power source to keep things working. But instead of batteries, we have something called the power of life. Okay, and we don't really understand it. We don't. We don't know where it comes from. We don't really know how it works, but nobody can deny that it does exist, and it seems to work just fine for the 80 or 90 or however many years we're on the planet. Now, if I take the portable radio and I put it right here on the podium and I turn it on, it would start playing. In fact, it doesn't matter where I put it. I can hand it to Angela. I can put it back there with David. I can set it in the lobby, wherever it happens to go. And it will play, all right, no matter where I put it. Now, we know that's not because the music is already inside of it. Remember, this is not an iPhone with your iTunes library in it, okay? This is just an old-time portable radio. But the reason it plays wherever I put it is because everywhere in this auditorium, at every single point, or in the lobby, or on the street, or around the block, there is an energy present that is being transmitted from a source that doesn't know or care where this radio is located. It's everywhere, wherever you put it. It doesn't care who is listening. It doesn't care if anyone is listening. It doesn't care if the radio is on or off or if it's ready to receive or not. This source transmits the same signal all the time, everywhere, ready to be turned into beautiful music, and anybody who simply turns on a radio can use it. Anybody. You don't have to be smart. You don't have to be good-looking. You don't have to have a lot of money. You don't have to be Christian or Muslim or Jewish or anything else. It works the same for everybody. Same power is available. Now, one more minor thing we might notice while we're talking about this is that the signal from the source can't be diminished by too many radios tuning in. It can't reduce the amount of energy, whatever. And the radio waves will not overflow if there aren't enough radios turned on. So there's always the exact amount of energy and information right wherever it needs to be. All right, that's what we know about the source. All right, now, let's get back to the radios themselves. Remember, we are the radio, the portable radio, okay? We can put 10 radios in the same place and play the exact same thing. Or we can have 5 playing one thing and 5 playing another. Let's assume that the source is transmitting a bunch of different stations, whatever. Or they can all, 8 to 2, whatever we want to do, we can change that. Now, the radios might be very different from one another. They might be older and newer and different sizes, made in different countries, but it makes no difference to the source. It makes no difference to the signal. All of those radio waves that are flowing everywhere all the time don't care which radio is playing what, and neither do the other radios. All right? However, let's stretch this a little bit. If we had one special radio, okay, one that was self-aware and willing to make its own decisions, which radios don't do, but neither do a lot of people, okay, that one radio could choose to play what all the other radios are playing, or it could make its own choice based on what it wants to hear or to play. But in order to change what it's playing, what it is putting out, even to change it radically, maybe from easily listening to rap or something really drastic, our special radio would not have to move to another spot to play a different kind of music. It wouldn't have to push any other radios out of the way or get their permission to change, and it wouldn't have to pray to the source to get a different signal. It wouldn't have to do any of those things. All it would have to do is to slightly change its inner setting, all right, slightly change its vibration of one small part of its inner makeup, what we call the tuner, and the appropriate invisible information direct from the source, perfectly matched to that vibration, would immediately start to play as music, right? You see where I'm going here? Okay. Now, the music wouldn't have to come racing over to that radio from another radio, okay, and jump inside and start playing, it would immediately start to play or to manifest, there's another word, through it because the signal was already there. It was there all the time, fully present, ready to work for that radio or any other radio who made the same choice by choosing a matching frequency. Now, we talk about this in terms of music with this analogy, but what if that frequency was success or prosperity or healing? Or something like that. Match the vibration and the manifestation plays. Now, sometimes you can have problems in radio land, but most problems are not source problems. They are receiver problems. Okay? Receivers, right? Okay? For example, one radio could be tuned to a blank frequency and play nothing but white noise. Or there might be static on one radio because it hadn't been played in a while and it had rust and dust inside. If one individual radio, I love this part of it, had been playing classical music for a very long time, even though it never liked classical music very much, and it finally decided, I want something different. I want rock and roll, 60s rock and roll, okay? but it wasn't willing to change its frequency, then nothing would change. Okay? Instead of roll over Beethoven, you'd still get Beethoven's fifth, like it or not. Okay? Not because it was being punished by the source, not because the rock and roll signal wasn't already available, not because that radio wasn't perfectly capable of tuning in the right frequency. Nothing new would happen because we can never change what we're putting out until we first change what we're doing in here. In here. That's the way the law works. Dr. Holmes says it this way in the book. He says, universal principles or universal laws are never respecters of individuals. The universe has no favorites. The universe has no favorites. So our lonely little radio here will remain unhappy and unfulfilled playing classical music until it does what it needs to do to create the thing it wants. That is, until it chooses to change how it receives what's already there, what's already available. All right, that's the receiver part of our being. Now let's talk about the transmitting part, because we do a lot of transmitting. We really do, okay? Our words, our emotional state, our tone of voice, our facial expressions, our body language, all these different things, all these physical mannerisms scream out to whoever happens to be around us exactly where we are in consciousness at any given moment on a mental, emotional, and spiritual level. Now, we may try to keep it inside. This way I do it. I try to look cool even when I'm hacked off, okay? But it doesn't really work. Ask my wife, okay? We can all tell very, very quickly when someone, especially someone close to us, is angry or happy or afraid or peaceful or whatever it happens to be, even if they don't tell us what's going on. We don't have to be a mind reader. We can feel it because they're transmitting, but we are what? We're receivers. We just talked about that. Because of the intensity with which they are transmitting it. But our ability to transmit goes far beyond just the physical level. As spiritual beings, the truth is, we are constantly transmitting in every direction, just like a radio station, whatever is in our consciousness, whatever is most firmly entrenched in our mind and in our heart. We are. As beings of thought and energy and emotion, of course, which is what we are, we extend far beyond this physical form. Some spiritual teachings talk about auras. So it's like our energy is not inside our body. Our body is inside an energy thing that has no distinct edges to it. Scientists, once they finally discovered how to do it, can actually take pictures of people that can see an energy field emanating out from them. And it changes shape and it changes color based on moods, based on ideas. And it changes based on whatever we think and feel. I mean, have you ever had the experience where you met someone for the first time and you knew you were on the same wavelength? Just by saying hello, whatever it happens to be, okay? Or, on the flip side, have you ever sat down next to somebody on an airplane, on a bus, whatever it happens to be, and started feeling physically ill because they were putting out such waves of anger or hatred or fear, whatever happened, without anybody even saying anything? These are both examples of the kind of energy that we all put out unconsciously all the time. But there are other ways we transmit this power. You may not be familiar with it, but there are a number of different scientific experiments. We talked about them in a Greg Braden class a couple years ago, where plants were grown in a greenhouse and they were subjected to the prayers or thoughts of different group of people. And the people were instructed to transmit either positive, loving thoughts or angry, hateful thoughts to the plants. Sounds a little strange, but it was an actual scientific experiment. And the difference between the amount that the plants grew was more than just statistically significant. It was amazing. It was substantial and verifiable. Okay? We know that. The difference between them was just amazing. And all of us have been in places, for example, like an ancient monastery or a sacred burial ground, someplace where you could feel the sense of peace. You walk into Oakland Cemetery right here in Atlanta, and it changes you just being there, just being there. You go to the Normandy beaches, which I did 45 years ago, and you stand there, you can feel all that energy. On the other hand, if you walk through some of the death camps, the concentration camps from World War II, like Auschwitz, I know some of you have been there, or if you stand and look at the hole where the World Trade Center used to be, you can feel that energy too. It's a feeling. It's a feeling. All of this tells us is that we are all beings of thoughts and emotion immersed, as Judy said, immersed in the same one mind, transmitting and receiving energy back and forth. So every thought, every feeling that we ever have not only comes to us and through us, every thought and feeling that we ever express, get this, goes back into that same consciousness and never disappears. Never disappears. There's a term for this in spirituality. They call it the Akashic Records. You may have come across that term. Carl Jung called it the collective unconscious. And every one of us is constantly feeding into it and feeding from it all the time. All the time. So if we just pay attention, as Judy said, we can start to see how this idea of transmitting that we are doing, either consciously or unconsciously, can affect the kind of life that we create for ourselves. A person who, whether they realize it or not, is constantly feeling self-conscious or incompetent or self-critical transmits an atmosphere of rejection and failure wherever they go, and every part of their life is going to reflect that. You can take that to the bank. On the other hand, a person who at the core of their being, at their deepest center, is truly self-confident and forgiving of others and themselves and just happy to be alive is like a magnet. Get that? That's a simile. Is like a magnet, okay, for love, prosperity, and success. So we've given this a name. What is it? What do we call it? We call it the law of attraction, right? The law of attraction. Now today, in terms of spreading and broadcasting information, most people are focused on the power of the internet. But the interesting thing is, we've technologized it, but it's not a new idea. 4,000 years ago, the Hindus had something called the Web of Indra, where everything was connected. The Native Americans, a couple 300 years ago, whatever, they actually talked about something like the World Wide Web, though they didn't use that name. They called it the Web of Life. The web of life. And they believe that every part of life, including us, was connected to every other part. In fact, they believe we are even more than interconnected. They believe we were interdependent. Much more powerful. That's why they were so in tune with the environment and the animals and the weather. They believe that if any one part of life disappeared, that the whole web would suffer. The whole web would suffer. If any one part of life started to fall apart, then everything else might start to fall apart too. So because everything was supported by everything else, they believed it was absolutely essential for us to put more and more of our life force back into the system in every possible way, not just physically, but spiritually. But spiritually, okay? That's why they prayed for the health of the forest. They prayed for the purity of the water. They prayed for the bounty of the buffalo herds. And they didn't just try to think positively. There wasn't a, you know, Cherokee Tony Robbins out there trying to get everybody to, hey, let's just think of a good thought, okay? They consciously and deliberately, that's very important, extended their whole heart and their whole belief into seeing these things happen. And they did it through ceremonies and rituals that were sometimes many generations old. The more they did these things as part of the culture of their tribe, the better their reciprocal nature with life became. Their spiritual beliefs became interwoven with their daily life as part of what they received and part of what they were putting out. And there's a message in this for all of us. And here it is. To create the things that we all want to create in the world, and we all want to create the same things like love and peace and balance and prosperity and healing. Anybody want all these things? I think we all do, okay. In order to create these things, we have to look more closely at our relationship with the world and with each other and maybe do a few things differently, okay? You see, we are constantly receiving everything we need in the form of energy from the one source of everything. But we have to be open to receiving it. We have to be turned on, so to speak, with a radio analogy, or we won't even recognize that it's already there. We also have to become aware of what we are broadcasting to the world around us, to the people around us. We need to start consciously choosing to put out only what we want to see more of. Only what we want to see more of. And then we can only do both of these things by getting more perfectly in tune with what we want to receive and what we consciously choose to transmit. Dr. Holmes said this in this talk. He said, we have to love if we are going to broadcast love. We can't hate and broadcast love any more than a harp can broadcast piano music. Look at the analogy. So as we allow this flow, all right, life is a flow, our body is a flow, this back and forth of transmitting and receiving and being open in both directions, very, very important. As we allow this to continue to expand in everything we do, the great thing is we're going to discover that we can change not only the circumstances of our own life, we can also start creating a world that is filled with beautiful music we can all enjoy, and we won't even have to turn on a radio to do it. I don't know about you, but that's the kind of world that I want to live in, because this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's take a breath. Take a moment. A lot of information, a lot of ideas, I know. Just take the ones that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's just be present right now in this moment. This is a great gift, recognizing that right where we are should be where we are physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. In this place, in this time. Because from this moment, we are able to create anything we desire. From this moment in time, this place, as we shift our consciousness in the direction of what we desire, we begin to transmit to the world that this is what we are ready to receive. So I know, for me, for every person here, that I am choosing to transmit a belief in health as the true nature of all people. Recognizing that health is the true nature of my body, that illness and disease are disruptions when I allow my consciousness to stray and do not make the good decisions that I know I need to make. I recognize that prosperity is not just a thing given to a chosen few. I recognize that prosperity is the nature of spirit. Abundance everywhere. Not just an abundance of things, but an abundance of ideas. An abundance of possibilities. So I place myself directly in this flow of abundance, allowing myself to attract ideas that support my prosperity. And as I do so, I don't worry so much about how prosperous I am, because I know I am, but I share this prosperity with others and help them to become what they can be too. I recognize that my success, my career, my retirement, whatever stage of life I am in, has not changed me as a creative being. So I am able to create all sorts of possibilities that feed my soul and allow me to prepare for the transition that we will all face to the next experience. And I believe in love as the greatest power in life. I believe in love not just as a physical embracing of the people I know and care for, but as a consciousness that I express towards everyone I meet and even those I don't. And I realize that if every person on the planet change their mind to one supporting love, that the world would be transformed in an instant. Wars would stop, children would be fed, prosperity would bloom, diseases would be healed. All of this can happen by the world shifting their consciousness. But I only control mine. But I am an individual expression of the only power there is, and every one of us who changes our mind changes the world. So I do not give any energy, any strength, even any attention to the fear and the anger and the hatred and the negativity that so many misguided people are expressing in the world. I do not get angry back. I do not hate back someone who hates me. I do as the great teacher Jesus said, I love my friends and my enemies. I give that love out unconditionally everywhere I go and everything I do. I smile to people I meet. I am kind. I speak no harsh words, no gossip, none of this. I simply recognize that love is the way to go. So as I begin to realize all of this, I become grateful for the life that I'm creating, for the opportunities that I have, for the ability to help others, for the ability to heal my own negative thoughts and the thoughts of others. And I embrace this life as something truly amazing that I have been given. So I live this life well. I share it well. And I embrace it every day. This is my truth. I accept it. And I release it into consciousness, knowing that it is so. Join me in saying, and so it is.